You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wham Goat presents the Band Flip Podcast.
What is up? Welcome to this week's episode of the Band Flip Podcast. I am your host, Lurk, and today I am joined by, joined with Jeff Irwin of the long-running band Willhaven. Welcome to the show, Jeff. How you doing, man?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing great. It is awesome. It's a nice Monday evening here.
Yeah, it's actually still Monday afternoon here, so.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are you guys still out? Are you guys still out there in California? Yeah. Are you guys out there still?
Yep, all still in Sacramento.
Nice.
Born and raised, yeah.
Nice. My first thing that I wanted to kind of start off with is, like, how sick are you guys of, like, the Deftones comparison?
it's funny. I saw a couple magazines, like, say something like, you know, just recently kind of saying if you like Deftones or whatever. I mean, it's cool. I mean, there's worse bands to be, you know, lumped in with for sure, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
But, it's, I don't hate it. I don't hate it on our side. I feel bad for those guys more so because they're probably sick of hearing their name. Well, they haven't always been brought up with their name. It's like, yeah. I mean, how long can we ride those guys' coattails? I hate when, you know, but I don't think they think that. Sometimes I think that, but I don't mind it. In the sense that they are our buddies and we are still close and, you know, they are an inspiration for us. And, you know, we grew up with those guys and there wouldn't be a Willing without Deftones. So we owe a lot to them. And, you know, that if that name comes up, I don't go, oh, that sucks. You know, I totally embrace it, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it. But I mean, I had to ask because every time, you know, you hear Willhaven, it's followed shortly or within the same couple paragraphs or sentences of the word Deftones. It's kind of all somewhat married to each other. So, you know, I would assume, like, as a band, you want to kind of stand on your own 2 feet as well. So constantly hearing that comparison. But again, like, that they've changed their sound so often that it doesn't even really stick anymore. You know, I mean, maybe in those early Adrenaline Around the Fur days when, you know, aggressive music was all just kind of, you know, forming new subgenres and stuff like that. You guys are in the same area, so of course it's going to kind of sound similar, but, you know, you guys strayed off shortly after that.
Yeah, I think we, I was already good friends with Deftones way before I started Willhaven, so there was definitely an influence there when I started Willhaven. I didn't necessarily set out to be Deftones, but, you know, being my best friends and hanging out with them all the time, of course it's going to seep into your music, but, you know, as the time went on, we both kind of just kind of done our own thing, you know. But I think it all started because the Deftones took us out on our first record on tour. You know, we played out of Sacramento a few times. We actually did a East Coast tour before we went out with them. But our first major step into the real music world was with Deftones. They kind of took us under their wing. So I get it where people just assume that we're in that camp because, you know, they were kind of the ones that championed us first out of anybody. So, like I said, we wouldn't be here without them, so.
What else was going on in that time frame locally to you guys that was also kind of like just bubbling up? Because obviously, like, when one thing happens in an area, you know, the record labels kind of focus their laser beams in an area and they kind of shoot around and get a couple different bands from that, you know, area to kind of like see what works. But outside of the Deftones and Willhaven, what else did they kind of like, you know, snag up?
Far got signed Immortal Sony, right around a little after Deftones did. Papa Roach came in a little bit after we'd already kind of done our own stuff. Hake got signed, but, you know, they kind of blew up a little later too, right, with their singles and stuff. Tesla's always been here. What other bands came? We had a lot of like up and coming bands that never really.
Which ones
broke
didn't?
Through,
yeah,
you know?
Which ones were those that didn't really make the cut, but would have, you know, but are, were still like big local draws that, you know, did some regional stuff or whatnot?
You know, I guess there was a band called Simon Says that I got signed to Hollywood.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, they were kind of in that where bands in Sacramento were starting to get looked at more seriously. And I think the Papa Roach thing really like sparked it, because Deftones were like the first band to kind of get that major label signed out of that new era. And then Far, and then when Papa Roach got signed, they sold what, 7 million off their first record. That's when everybody's like, oh, let's look at bands at Sac. You know, let's,
yeah,
what are these other bands that they're managed by? Because their Papa Roach's first manager, Brett, is from Sacramento. So, and he was doing like Alien Ant Farm and a couple other bands. So they were like just honing on Brett, like, all right, your band just sold 7 million. Like, whatever the band you got for us, yeah, you know. So he was kind of feeding bands to the major label industry too. So, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of bands that did get signed and never put out a record, which was crazy. We had one of my best friends' bands got signed to, I think, DreamWorks, I think. And DreamWorks took care of them for like a year, but they never even put out a record. It was crazy for a while, you know, but that's when money was flowing. I mean, that was late 90s. Like everybody, I mean, the labels are just throwing money at everybody, yeah, you know? So it's one of those things. But, you know, we never became the Seattle scene, but I mean, there were some pretty iconic bands that came out of Sacramento, you know, that did some damage.
Yeah, for sure. That's why I asked. I had to ask because, like, you know, so many bands from that time frame did come from that area of California. So, you know, I had to ask. Simon Says.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No. Definitely remember that little metal band.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was a cool scene, you know. I think a lot of the earlier bands were better than the ones that got the deals, you know. Yeah. But that's just how it goes, you know.
I mean, yeah, that's how the locals are supposed to kind of react to that.
Yeah, totally.
So how does Will Haven come about? You know, like, obviously you said you're friends with the Deftones before they were the Deftones. So are you guys like all jamming around, you know, with each other, and then all of a sudden they kind of form up, and then at some point Jeff and the boys form up?
Yeah. So, I mean, Deftones were around when I became friends with Chino and Steph and those guys. I mean, they had just started, you know, playing around Sacramento, but they had a little bit of a draw, but they weren't drawn huge yet. And then I became really close with the Far guys. Far was around as well, but they had put out their first demo. So it was after college I started hanging out with those guys. I mean, me and Sean Lopez from Far became roommates, and I lived with him for like 10 years. And so I was there from the beginning, from like Far and Deftones, seeing them become a local band to a headliner to all of a sudden getting signed. So you know, I was there. I was just kind of roadie. I mean, I roadie for Far for a little bit, I roadie for Deftones for a little bit back in the day, and I thought, figure out, hey, maybe I'll just be involved somehow with Rode In or whatever. And then I played drums in a band. Me and Sean had started a side band together called Sock, and because we were roommates, so we just started jamming together, and Sock put out a demo tape, and we were looking to get maybe signed by Victory or something like that. We were talking to Victory, but that didn't pan out. And then Far got signed to Sony, and then when Far got signed, that's when Sock kind of broken up because Sean was busy with Far. So I was like, you know, I still want to play music. So I started a band with Grady and Mike and Wayne, who were my best friends at the time, outside of, you know, the Far Deftones guys. And we just started playing, we started jamming, and we didn't really think much of it. You know, like, we started writing songs, and then all of a sudden the songs kind of turned into a demo, and then the demo got assigned to Revelation, and then all of a sudden we're putting out El Diablo. So it was like really organic bands that we weren't put together as like anything but just friends playing music, you know. And it still is that way today, but it was just very organically done. Like, we didn't think anything would happen with it. We were just hanging out, you know.
When did you
but luckily we knew the right people at the right time, you know, like right when Willhaven started kind of getting a little bit of momentum. That's when Deftones got signed, Far got signed. So, you know, they were, those two bands were looking out for us, putting us on shows, letting us perform.
Yeah, in good company.
Yeah, so we got lucky, dude. Like, that's all I gotta say. You know, seriously, like, yeah. I mean, one in a million bands get the opportunity to have like two of your best friends like get signed to like major labels and go on to do some pretty cool stuff, you know.
True. Yeah. When did you start playing? Because you play guitar in Willhaven. So were you playing guitar before you were playing drums, or were you just messing around on the drums with your buddy in Sock?
Well, it's funny. My dad played guitar when I was a kid, and I always had this. I always wanted to start a band with my dad, you know. And I was like, "Dad, buy me some drum sets, and we'll start a band together." So, by the time I was 12, he finally, like, for Christmas, bought me a drum set. And so me and him would just kind of just screw around at his house. And then I took drums home, and because I was at his house, I took it to my mom's house where I ended up living full time. And I just played drums every single day after school, on the weekends. Anytime I could play my drums, I did.
As a kid, as a kid normally would. You know.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, just like annoying the fucking neighbors, like playing in the middle of the night and getting in trouble by mom. Like it was chaos. But I love my drum set, and I just, that's all I live for, you know. So when I moved in with Sean from far, like I still played drums. I actually played in another little fun band with some guys I didn't really know. I was just playing drums with them and stuff. So drums were there, and then we started Sock, and I played drums in Sock, and I totally fell in love with playing with other musicians, like my friends too. And so when Sock broke up, you know, we tried to replace Sean. We tried to start something else with somebody else, another guitar player, and we tried a bunch of guitar players, and they were horrible, you know. They didn't, I mean, Sean's kind of a unique individual when it comes to like writing that kind of stuff, so it was hard to replace them. And I was like, screw it, I always wanted to play guitar in a way, and this was my chance to like put the drums aside and just pick up guitar and start playing guitar. Because I'd learned a lot from my dad, and I'd been around Sean and Stefan for so long. I was like, hey, I could figure this out. You know, it's not that hard, you know? Okay. So that's how guitar came into my life, is when I started Willhaven. It was a new challenge and wanted to try something different. And I always thought guitar was kind of a fun instrument to play. So
how proficient were you really at it when you started Willhaven, or when you started writing with Willhaven, I should say?
Oh, I was terrible. I mean, I'm still terrible. Like, I don't know notes. I don't know. I know chords. I know a few notes here and there.
That's a running thing with most of the musicians that I've talked to. For the most part, it's a roll of the dice, and I would say most of them aren't, I don't want to say like classically trained, but like most of them don't necessarily know like notes or what the chords call. They just know the hand placement and what it sounds like, or what sounds are made on the fretboard, and when, you know, what you have to do with your hands and stuff like that. So you're not like alone in that aspect, where, you know, you're not like as good as you think you are. You're probably better than a lot of people out there, but you know. Hey, what's up? It's Lurk. Looks like you're enjoying the podcast. If you are and you like what we're doing here on The Van Flip, why don't you go ahead and pause this and give us a rating and review on whatever platform you're listening to. If you want to find out any information on your favorite bands from the hardcore and metal scene, visit lambgoat.com. And to stay in the loop about everything that we post on lambgoat.com, make sure you like us on Facebook, and you head over to Twitter and Instagram and follow us at lambgoat. Are you a full-grown adult and you also have a TikTok account? Congrats. Follow us on TikTok as well. You can find us under the username lambgoat.com. That's spelled out D-O-T-C-O-M. Head over to our YouTube channel, where we have all of these podcasts in video format, plus a lot more content that you should check out. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and you hit that notification bell so you're always alerted when we upload new content. And last but not least, if you want to follow me, Lurk, the host of the show, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at LurkCity. And as always, if you need any of the links that pertain to the artists on the show today, Lambgoat, or myself, you can always find them in the description. Thanks for listening to this message. Now let's get back to the show.
Well, it's funny because, like, I don't think Sean didn't take lessons, neither did Stefan, you know, and look what they became, you know. So it's all about, it's like, I did take Loan lesson. And when I started playing, I was like, well, I'll take a lesson. And he tried to teach me like some Led Zeppelin song. And I'm like, I'm not here to learn Led Zeppelin. Like, I want to like learn how to play the guitar, you know. And so every lesson I learned after that or heard about was like, they were just trying to teach you like songs. I'm like, that's not what I want to play my own songs, you know. So that's how I was like, screw it, I'm gonna just learn on my own. And basically, guitar for me isn't an instrument to me. It's more an expression of who I am. So that's how the cheesy to say, but it is in a way, because like how I play my guitar is what I'm feeling, you know. Like when I pick up the guitar and I strum whatever I strum, because I don't really know a lot of chords, but whatever I put my finger somewhere and it sounds like it moves me, then I'm like, all right, I'm keeping that, you know, or I'm gonna work with that or whatever. So yeah, it's as cheesy as it sounds, it's true. Like, it is just an extension of like me. I'm a very like mellow dude, but when I pick up a guitar, I want to kill shit. I want to break shit. You know, like I have this rage inside me when I play that guitar. It's like I just want to like play that gnarly stuff I can, you know, but without even knowing how to play it.
Are you, who's the biggest songwriter in the group then and now?
Me.
You? All right. Yeah. That's kind of what I was wondering. Because again, it's like, I'm trying to like think of how good you were. I mean, you were good enough to at least toss together a couple songs for a demo, you know what I mean? So you're proficient enough at playing guitar for that, which You know, that would take normal people years to get to that level.
Well, I've actually told people this too. Like, if you want to learn how to play pretty much bass or even guitar, if you can learn how to play drums first, like, that is a huge stepping stone into becoming a good guitar player, because your rhythmic skills, like, you play, like, I play as a drummer. Mm-hmm. Like, my timing, like 6/8 timing, whatever, I play as I'm hearing drums in my head. A lot of guitar players don't know how to play drums. They're just playing something. They don't hear the drums in their head. They just take it to the drummer, mm-hmm. guy, and you do what you're going to do over it. But for me, I'm very rhythmic, and that's why, like, El Diablo and all these early records are so rhythmic, is because that's how I'm hearing it in my head. Like, so I'm playing the drums as long as I'm playing these riffs. So for me, it's like learning how to play drums and playing drums forever. Like, I have that rhythmic timing in my head. So when I play guitar, I'm not thinking of the notes or, like, song structures. I'm just playing how I play drums on guitar, basically, gotcha. Which is making the most evilest notes I can play. So that's how I became proficient at, like, trying to figure out how to write songs. I have a band in my head already, you know, instead of just picking up guitar and playing. I have a band playing in my head as I'm playing my guitar. But you can see it, like, with Dave Grohl, it's like one of the baddest drummers ever, but dude, he's an awesome guitar player too and singer. So it's, but I think he has that same thing that I have, like that rhythmic thing in his head where he just can pick up guitar and, like, percussively play it, you know, and get his timing in his head and get a rhythm in his head and, like, okay, I can write a song. It's not that hard, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting way to see it. I don't see it like that, even though I don't play drums, but I also don't really want to claim to know how to play guitar either. I'm in the process of learning, you know. I have a couple of years under my belt, but I trying the old YouTube University route, you know, and so I'm learning it that way.
I do that too. Like, there's a lot of songs that I would love to, like, play, like Pink Floyd songs, mm-hmm. or like songs that I've heard on the radio. I'm like, I want to play that. So I'll go on YouTube and I'll learn, like, the chords, whatever. So over the years, I've learned how to play certain notes and chords and stuff and cover songs. But, like, for me, like Wilhaven, I don't want to know anything. I just want to, like, pick it up and play whatever comes out, you know, like, I'm no song structure, no chord structure, nothing like that. I just wanted to be the most weirdest shit I could play out of that thing.
That brings me to the next, like, kind of bit of questions here. You know, the earlier stuff from you guys, because I know we started out with the Deftones reference, and obviously, like whenever I was thinking about this interview or podcast, I was thinking about how it doesn't really, I mean, yeah, the Deftones reference maybe works because you guys both are from Sacramento and both aggressive, but if you really take a second and listen to, like, both of your earlier records, like, you guys have so much more of a metalcore scene, like, hardcore influence than, like, they do or they did, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that was the most surprising thing, because you guys, and again, I grew up listening to nu metal and I love nu metal, but you also did get lumped into a lot of nu metal chatter earlier back in the day. And I remember that because I was, you know, cognizant of you guys back then too. So, do you think, like where, what were your influences in those early days? Because you also mentioned getting signed to Victory and being, you know, Wilhaven being on Revelation. So you guys, you know, had some feet or, you know, some part of the body in the scene, you know, in the hardcore metal scene. So I just wanted to kind of expand on that.
Yeah. So, when I had moved into with Sean from Far, his first band that he was ever in was called Inner Strength. Mm. And they were a straight edge band, mm-hmm. and they were the first band on Inbound Victory.
Yeah.
So Sean has always been in that scene. Like, he's always been involved, like, known to that scene, mostly because our friend Jeff Jaworski, who we wrote a song about, was always into that scene. So when I moved in with Sean, like, I started getting into, like, Youth of Today and Gorilla Biscuits and that whole Revelation catalog. And then all of a sudden you see, like, you know, the Victory catalog coming out with Earth Crisis and Snapcase and Dead Guy and Bloodlet. And I was like, okay, that's where my, like, inspiration really came from. And so, you know, I was in Faith No More and stuff like it. A lot of the bands that Deftones were inspired by, like Bad Brains, Faith No More, stuff like that, I was into as well. But when I started Wilhaven, it was more like I didn't really want to do what my friends were doing, because I didn't think I was that good to begin with, you know?
Well, they're getting, like, and no offense to anybody or anything, but, like, they're they're going like a totally different trajectory. They're like shooting for the stars, so to speak. Like, because around that same time, like MTV's huge, and like clearly those bands were shooting for like the quote unquote rock star lifestyle. Whereas like maybe the bands you're listening to are like totally not going that route. They're in totally like, DIY underground.
But also like when I was starting Wilhaven, Deftones had already been around for a while, and to me, like, they were some of the best musicians in Sacramento by then. You know, Abe had joined Deftones during that, around 95 or whatever, and when he joined the band, I was like, okay, that's the most all-star Sacramento band you can have. Like, Chino's the best singer, Steph's the best guitar. So I was like, when I started Wilhaven, I was like, okay, I'm not that good, so I don't think I could write that kind of stuff. But so I didn't want to be what my friends were doing, and then also I had other influences that were like Neurosis and like Bloodlet. Neurosis was a huge influence on me at the beginning, so I was more into that kind of stuff, you know. And then that's when I had the bass of Wilhaven was kind of Neurosis, Bad Brains kind of stuff. And then we had a manager who ended up managing like Snapcase and Earth Crisis really early on. He actually managed Far for a little bit too, and he got into the LA hardcore scene, you know, and he piped us into that. And we were opening up for like Strife, and whenever Snapcase would come into town, and whenever Earth Crisis would come into town, we'd open up for them. We became really good friends with those guys. So, like, before the whole Deftones thing that we got thrown into, like, we were really into like that Victory of Revelation scene. Like, we were playing Showcase Theater in LA all the time, which was like the big hardcore staple. And so, but the funny thing is that we were playing these shows, but we felt like we didn't fit in at all. You know, like. That was a funny thing. It's like we were playing like Strife and Earth Crisis, and like,
yeah, but listening back now, it's like it fits so well for that time, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but back then they didn't get it, because like we were playing like more Neurosis-y kind of stuff, and like then you had like them coming out playing Firestorm, which was like completely different, you know?
For sure.
And the crowd was going nuts for us. But we didn't have like those anthems, those straight edge anthems. We didn't claim straight edge, but I mean, we were in the scene, but we didn't claim it. We weren't, you know, as militant as some of those other bands were. So we were in that scene, but we didn't fit. I don't think we fit in. And what's funny is when the Deftones took us out, we were still on that El Diablo kick, more Neurosis-y kind of, you know, stuff. But that fan base totally picked it up and loved it. So it was like weird. Us being from the hardcore scene, I thought they would love it, but actually the newer metal fans, kids liked it, you know? And then we went out with Slipknot, and the Slipknot fans loved us. And yeah, so it was like kind of a head fuck to me. I'm like, all right, I thought the hardcore kids like this stuff, but actually the newer metal kids like this stuff way more. It's like, it was weird, yeah. But I don't think we ever really fit in wherever we opened up for. I just thought we were kind of like the...
A lot of bands said that too. Like Dead Guys said that in their documentaries, and like other, you know, Drowning Out, all those things. All those bands...
Well, especially them, yeah.
Yeah, all those bands that are kind of in the same vein, you know what I mean? Early metalcore bands are... Didn't fit in either, because you're mixing a lot of, you know, you're mixing hardcore and metal, and you're kind of forcing two together, and some of the, you know, OGs don't really like that or take to that really well. But looking back,
it's funny,
now,
I just, you know, I just watched that Dead Guy documentary, and I felt like I had so much kinship with those guys in that documentary. Like, I get it, I know exactly what you guys are talking about, and but I love every one of my favorite bands ever, you know. So I totally get it, and I felt connection to those guys. Yeah, we kind of played those scenes, and we didn't feel like we fit in either. Yeah. It was like we were kind of on our own little world, you know.
So this, you know, piggybacking off of that, like you guys release Wilhaven, and you guys are, you know, the 2001 Carpe Diem, 2001, right? So you're releasing those albums, and then like all of a sudden you get lumped into this whole like nu metal vibe. I don't know if you start changing the sound that drastically or whatnot, because again, some of the newer stuff sounds similar to your earlier stuff, so it's all relative. But do you think like the nu metal pairing like hurt Wilhaven in the early days?
No, because I think the nu metal thing, like, I don't think our career really jumped until we did that Deftones tour, you know. Before the Deftones tour, we did a couple of shows with Bloodlet on the East Coast. We did CMJ Festival in New York and stuff, and they were okay, you know, but we didn't feel like we ever popped at all. Like, we never really headlined LA or anything like that. We always opened up for somebody. And then when Deftones took us out and we did the whole US and European stuff with them, like, that's when I felt like, okay, now we're a real band, you know, now where people are taking us more seriously. And then that just snowballed into, like, we, after that we toured with Soulfly, like, a lot. And we toured with we toured with Fear Factory, we toured with Slipknot, like, so like all these, and we do there occasionally, we did enough Hatebreed and stuff like that. So we still dabble our toes in the hardcore scene, but yeah. we just have to Converge and Coalesce, but you know, it was like, I felt like maybe it was a bigger audience that we were reaching with Deftones.
Oh, for
but
sure,
I felt like, I felt that the Deftones crowd still to this day is more, I would say more of our made up fan base than it is the old hardcore crowd that we were playing for back in the day. Because everybody I talked to is like, oh, I saw you guys with Deftones in Florida or in London or whatever. Like, I don't hear anybody say, oh, it's a showcase up and up for, you know, Earth Crisis. I never hear that. I always hear the Deftones story. So obviously, I think all of our fan base is from that new metal world. So I think it helped us.
The reason I asked is because, like, a lot of that is lost on, like, you know, I forgot or just sometimes didn't even know that you guys moonlighted, like, so frequently like that early on. You know, like, I forget because, like, when I heard about you, or when you would always be in the chatter of, like, online early blogs and early websites and stuff, because I ran, when I was, like, a young teenager, I also had a website similar to this one, Lamb Goat, but more, like, nu metal based. But, you know, when I kind of always lumped you guys into that window, so it was wild to, when I was researching some stuff, going like, oh yeah, they were on Revelation, oh, they're connected with this or the other stuff. So it's weird, but you know, part of me also wonders, like, what happens if you would have gone more like that route with touring with those bands. But again, you know, the crowds are much smaller, it would have been a lot harder to draw you know, at a quicker pace and stuff like that. And so obviously the opportunities presented with, like, bands like Soulfly and Slipknot and Deftones to a younger band are like, oh yeah, we'll just do that, obviously. But
it was a weird time, because, like, right before we put out El Diablo, or maybe right afterwards, that's when, like, the major label world got involved with the hardcore scene. Like, you saw Earth Crisis get signed to Roadrunner. Mm-hmm. Strife was getting, like, looked at by, like, Jay-Z's label or Stampcase was at one point. Like, Vision of Sorter got a record deal through. So, like, these hardcore bands were actually getting major label, like, recognition and, like, getting attention. And then we went out with Deftones, but then Earth Crisis was on Ozfest, and, like, and they were opening up for, like, big bands. And then, so there was a weird time where the industry kind of, like, saw the hardcore scene kind of blowing up a little bit. Like, yeah, let's get our hands in this, you know? And a lot of those bands didn't pan out. But you look at bands like Converge, like, they're huge, you know, and they're probably, they haven't toured with Deftones, so they're way bigger than we are, you know? So, I mean, if we would have went that route, I mean, if we could have tagged along with, like, maybe Converge or, you know, any of those bands that still come around, I mean, we probably would have been okay. You know, I think we probably would have been where we're at, you know, in some regards, but, yeah, I mean, it was underground for when we initially got into that hardcore scene, but then it started blowing up.
Yeah.
And, you know, then the money came in, and then things got crazy. But yeah, I think we got what was cool is we got to be in both worlds. You know, I feel like we're two different bands. Like, we got signed to Revelation, we were in this hardcore scene, and then all of a sudden we kind of, only by the grace of God, because we had best friends, the Deftones is the reason we moved up the other direction. You know, if we didn't know the Deftones guys, we'd probably still be in that Converge, like, world of, like, doing the more underground kind of, like, metal shows, whatever.
Yeah. So you guys, last year, I want to kind of move into the current day, because we keep, like, you know, lamenting, or not lamenting, but we keep going back to the old days. But last year, you kind of, or maybe, yeah, 2022, last year, you, released, like, a sequel to a documentary you did, like, early 2003, Foreign Films 2 was last year's. So how did that come about?
That was very organic, really. It's we were going on tour, it was 2019, and we were just doing, like, a short little European run. Mm-hmm. And this guy had emailed me, and he's like, hey, I want to come on tour with you guys. I just want to film a little thing on the road. And I was like, yeah, man. initially, I don't like people going on tour with us. It's like, you know, we have a very small group of people, and like when you bring somebody in new, you're like, okay, I don't know who these people are. But I let him come out, and we met him at the first show, and he just turned out to be this really awesome person. Super cool, mellow, knew the band's history, has been a fan of the band since Carpe Diem. Just very, like, didn't want to be in the way, just kind of held out in the corner, just popped in when he needed to be. Just, we didn't even know he was there half the time. Like, just a super rad guy. We became really good friends with him. He got so much good footage. And then he ended up doing like a little interview in our London show, each one of us. And I think he was going to kind of do just like a fun little tour documentary. And then he sat down and was like, hey, I got a bunch of footage here. Would you mind like doing like another kind of documentary based on the first one? I'm like, yeah, it sounds cool. And then he sent me like some initial stuff for it. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, this is really cool. And so they ended up putting it all together, and we ended up putting it out as like a kind of a, yeah, foreign films too. So it was really organic. We didn't plan on doing that at all. Yeah, just, okay. Dave just did an awesome job and like kind of turned it into something that turned out to be really cool. And like, I totally love that little documentary. It's awesome.
Yeah. I didn't know if you'd like purposely waited, you know, almost two decades to release some kind of other, you know, behind the scenes kind of styled footage, or if it was just something that you know, like you said, organically happened. So it's always good when it just kind of falls in your lap, you know?
Yeah. What's right about this band is we don't plan shit. Like, it just, whatever happens, it just happens just to come out of thin air. Like, I don't think we've ever planned anything.
What was the catalyst for like the 20-year anniversary tour that you're going on this year, right? That's coming up.
Yeah, so it was another organic thing. It just happened to pop up. So we had landed the Crucial Fest in Salt Lake City, and that was like the initial date that we had. And then Salt Lake City is about a 9-hour drive from here. So I'm like, well, if we're gonna go to Salt Lake City, let's try to book some other dates. So I ended up booking like Reno and like San Diego, stuff like that. So I made a little tour out of it. And then my bass player Adrian had mentioned, like, wait a minute, that's the same week as Burning Man. So I'm going to Burning Man. So I'm like, oh shit. So I'd already booked the tour. So I called our original bass player Mike, and I was like, hey, Adrian's going to be gone. Can you fill in for him for these dates? He's like, yeah, I'd love to do it. So, I was thinking, like, instead of Mike, because Mike hasn't been in the band since, what, 2000, I can't remember, 11, mm-hmm. 10 or 11. So it's been a while since. And I was like, well, I don't want him to learn all these songs, like, because we play so many songs. Like, well, how about we just do, like, a Carpe Diem reunion tour? Because we did it in London, and it was awesome. And people in America are like, why don't you do one here? Why don't you do one here? I'm like, well, here's the opportunity. Like, we'll get Mike back in the band, who's our original bass player, who played on Carpe Diem. So we have the original Carpe Diem lineup.
Nice, nice, nice.
It's kind of our, we haven't been able to celebrate that at all yet in America. So I was like, well, let's just make this a Carpe Diem. And that way you don't only have to learn that record. We're going to play a lot of new record too. But so it just kind of organically happened. Like, let's just do a Carpe Diem ad since Mike's in the band. So that's just how it, so that wasn't planned either. Just one of those things where it just made sense, you know, at the time.
Is it still is that part of the plans for your Furnace Fest appearance too, to play Carpe Diem or more heavy Carpe Diem material on that show?
On which one, sorry?
Furnace Fest.
Oh, Furnace Fest. I don't know. Well, Mike's only doing the West Coast stuff with us. Adrian will be back for Furnace Fest. So I don't know how long a set we have at Furnace Fest or anything. So it just kind of, we'll play it by ear. But most of our set is kind of Carpe Diem heavy anyway. So it's not. Yeah, I always assume we play these three or four songs off Carpe Diem anyway.
Interesting. Your last record before this year's upcoming release was in 2018, so about 5 years ago. But you're releasing in July. Well, it's either out or coming out this week or something like that. I'm not exactly sure when this podcast is airing, but as of recording this in June, in July you'll have album number 7, which is also titled 7. So was that another organic thing? Like, what happens with like, do you guys plan? We don't plan anything. We already went over that. But, you know, how does new music and how do new albums and singles and EPs come about in the Willhaven universe?
Yeah, I mean, we started writing right in 2019, this record, and then COVID hit. So when COVID hit, we were just like, okay, well, now we got so much time to like work on this thing. So we just took those 3 years, as long as we were locked down, just writing the record, going into the studio, recording it, with no really time schedule at all. You know, we're like, well, whenever the world opens up, we'll have enough songs to put out a record. So, so that it was also kind of organic. We initially wanted to put out like a single or something in 2020 because we were playing Download that year. So we thought maybe a single would be cool to have something up when we go to Download, but then Download got canceled. Mm. So then it got canceled like 2 years in a row after that. So
yeah, you played the 2022 one, I believe, right?
Yeah, yeah. So but we were supposed to play in 20 and 21. They both got canceled. So that whole time, that was the only thing we had planned. So so we didn't really have any schedule, no plans, nothing. Let's just keep writing. And then, you know, I always had the mind of calling it Seven when I started, just because it's our seventh record. Mm-hmm. You know, I just thought it was kind of cool or whatever. And naming album titles becomes such a pain in the ass. So just keep it simple, Seven, you know. But the crazy thing is that we finished the record and we started looking at when to put it out. And like, okay, well, 2023, I think will be the year we can finish everything and put it out. And which is crazy, when I started like looking, I'm like, well, 2023 is equal seven, which is crazy. that wasn't planned. And then when I was talking to our label, we were talking about doing singles and when we should put the record out. And then I was talking to him on the phone, all of a sudden just it hit me. I'm like, wait a minute, let's put it out on 7/7, July 7th. And they looked at it and like, oh my shit, oh my God, that's a Friday. That's perfect. So it just happened. Like everything just kind of fell into place. And then we were able to get our show in Sacramento that same day as our record release show that happened to be open, you know. So everything just kind of fell into place in just very weird way. And so yeah, it just, I mean, the record could have came out in 2019, you know, but COVID kind of fucked that up. So here we are, you know, finally getting it out.
It has to go the organic Wilhaven way, you know. It seems everything just seems to kind of just like line up for you guys, like you said. So don't rush it, don't push it.
Yeah, I guess part of the universe, right? The more you force the universe, the more it pushes back. Maybe mm-hmm. just let it ride and it's shit will just happen, you know.
Jeff, what do you do outside of Wilhaven when you have free time? Whether it's for your if you don't want to talk about your daily gig, your job, whatever you do for hobbies or whatever. But, you know, what are your jobs also interesting as well?
Yeah, I just work for a company and I just basically just do some office stuff for them. Some online ordering and stuff like that. So it's a really chill job. I mean, sometimes I can work from home, whatever. I mean, I worked at UPS for a long time. And then when there was a tour coming up and I asked for to leave of absence, they said no, like, well, fuck it, I'm leaving. So I ended up quitting. But I was there for like 10 years, whatever, 11 years.
But up until then, they were cool with you kind of like moonlighting in the, you know, band world.
Yeah, well, I was working part-time for a long time. I was working the graveyard shift from like 4 to 9 in the morning.
So not driving the truck, really, just kind of like doing sorting or packaging stuff.
So yeah, I was doing sorting. I was unloading the trucks at first, and then I went to sorting, and then during Christmas I'd help the driver deliver packages out there. And then I was thinking about taking a bigger, fuller position. And then but you know, they had changed management. My manager was actually really cool at the time, and he was totally supportive of the band. And I got a new supervisor, new manager, and they weren't as cool. So I'm like, fuck it, you know, I'll find something else. So
you got to find a manager that's a fan of the band. That way, you know.
Yeah, they weren't. Actually, my old supervisor used to come to shows, and then so he was really cool about it. But so I quit that and then started working for this company. So I've been in this company for quite a while, and I don't know, I just got a shitload of hobbies, you know, like. To me, life is all about having a shitload of hobbies. You know, yeah. I don't like being bored. So, I mean, I raced motorcycles for 10 years. I race motocross. I surf a lot now, which is, like, nice and easy on the body than riding motocross.
Did you not surf prior?
Yeah, I've surfed my whole life, but my girlfriend and I have a house that, or we don't own it, but we have a place we can go to that's right on the ocean. And we've been going there a lot, and it's right on near the beach, so I've been going down there all the time and just surfing my ass off. And so that's kind of my main passion is that. I play a lot of golf with some friends of mine, which is awesome. Kills the time. And So yeah, I try to keep busy. You know, yeah. I don't watch much TV at all. If I don't watch TV, I'm like writing music or, you know, just doing shit. Of course, I got dogs. I got to walk all the time. It's always time consuming. But yeah, I just try to keep busy and try to have fun. And, you know, hobbies are a big part of my life.
Yeah.
So it's probably why it's wind down a little bit. I was going crazy for a while with everything, but it's winding down and I'm getting older.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you had kids or anything like that, but that's probably inappropriate because obviously if you don't or do, but it sounded like you had a lot of free time for activities, so that's why I was asking. But
yeah, no kid. No yeah. kid. Two dogs. That's all I got.
It's kind of the same thing almost. You know, I have a dog, so I understand. Getting up there, she turned 12 this year, so. You know,
mine's 13 and 16. They're getting up there as well.
Oh, wow, yeah. Well, hey, if she can get to 16, I'll be happy as hell.
That's exactly what I said about mine. Like, if they make me 16, I'll be cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah, keep going on that. Yeah, no, it's always interesting to find out, like, what, you know, people's interests are and stuff like that. Like, you know, you're from California. Are you from California? Are you from the Sacramento area, born and raised?
Yeah, born and raised, yeah.
So, yeah, I would assume that if you hadn't said surfing at some point, you know, as a hobby, you wouldn't be considered a Californian. But, you know, I grew up, I'm on the other coast. I'm on the East Coast. So I grew up next to the Atlantic Ocean. But, like, I don't surf. Like, I don't know how to surf. But my excuse was, you know, we have, like, ankle to shin high waves out here on the East Coast for Florida. You know, at least you guys have, like, you know, stuff that you guys can get pitted in and you know do all sorts of cool stuff. We don't have that here unless like a hurricane comes. So I never really got like drawn into it, but it's cool.
Funny because Kelly Slater's from Florida.
Yeah, well, you know, he also like, surfs all over. He surfs all over. You know, he practices elsewhere.
Yeah, true. He travels the world now. Yeah, I always thought that when I found out he was from Cocoa Beach. I'm like, how the hell did Kelly Slater become number one in the world from Cocoa Beach?
Yeah, right.
And again, I've been there, and I haven't seen any waves.
No, yeah, we have a big, a real long shelf here. And again, like you know, he may have gotten a lot of practice in when like these hurricanes just kind of like whiff right by Florida, because where he would be from and where I'm from, it's in that little pocket where we kind of get missed a lot of the times and just get like the storm surge or the wind and stuff like that from it, but. Every now and then we'll get a little.
That's what he said. Every once in a while, they would get a decent surge in there that they could surf.
Interesting.
Wasn't much, but it was once in a while.
How'd you get into motocross? Is that like a California thing as well? Just like all the boys ripping it up on the hills, and you're just like, yeah, I want to do that.
Well, my mom had bought me a 50cc Suzuki when I was probably 8, and I would just. And my uncle had a house that had just tons of property, so I'd ride that thing all over and crash it and jump it. And,
the 80s, am I right?
Yeah, this would have been like, yeah, or late 70s probably. And then I kind of got out of it for a little bit, and then I was race, and then I don't know if anybody heard it, but there's a thing called speedway racing where it's like it's flat tracks, kind of with no brakes. Run on methanol, they're gnarly as hell. And I was going to those when I was a kid, watching those races, and I always like told myself, I want to race those one day. So at 30 years old, I think I finally bought my speedway bike and started racing speedway every Friday night for 10 years. Nice. Which is the stupidest thing to do for a musician, because like
get hurt.
That's one of the most dangerous sports you could ever do. It's worse than motocross. And then while I was racing speedway, a lot of my friends were in motocross too, so I ended up getting into that. And so I was riding a couple motocross races and stuff. So it's always been in my blood. You know, I was born in the dirt, and I love it. And I miss it. I don't do it now. I sold my bikes. I retired from speedway, and I sold my motocross bike to my buddy.
What's the difference between speedway? What exactly is speedway?
So speedway is on a small oval track.
Uh-huh.
And it's really hard. I mean, you just have to look it up, but it's basically the bikes are modified for only that sport. They're not for jumping. They're just straight for flat track.
Mm-hmm.
They run off methanol. They go to 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. They're weigh about 180 pounds. There's no brakes on them.
Okay.
Just a clutch and gas and you go. It's a gnarly sport. It's very small. Like it's popular in
where I'm living, and there's a town called Auburn, California, which is like kind of our Northern California like speedway track. It's pretty well known. But they get about 4,000, 5,000 people every Friday night out there.
Did you guys grow up with like lead in your water? Because it sounds like a bunch of just like psychos would.
The guys
psychos that just want to be like death defying, do that stuff with no breaks.
It's straight adrenaline junkies, dude. Like, yeah, these guys are gnarly. Like, they definitely have screwed looses, you know. But it's really popular in Europe, in England. That's where Speedway is, like, its home base is over there. And then we do a few tracks down south too. We would race the circuit stuff. So it's kind of underground though, which is fitting because that's kind of my whole thing, is like everything I do is kind of like underground.
Never
mainstream shit, you know. I had a blast doing it.
Did you ever get messed up? Did you ever get like, you know, a really good crash in there, or did you just like really dodge it for a decade?
I took a few tumbles. The last crash I did is one I retired on. I hit somebody and I flipped about three times, went into the fence, and I got up and I was like, had a big hematoma on my side and I couldn't walk for like 3 weeks. But that was the worst thing I ever had. It was my last one. After that, my bike was so fucked up, I was like, oh, I can't, I'm not gonna fix it, I'm just gonna quit, I'm gonna retire. So but luckily, yeah, nothing, no broken arms, like nothing fucked up. I was a good racer though. Like, I wasn't out there like twisting the throttle. I was very calculated, very smart. I knew I was in a band and I had shows coming up. I didn't want to fucking wad myself up, so I was very strategic. But
what's the average age of the drivers out there? Because obviously you said at 30 you joined, and so I would assume when you took your big tumble you were closer to 40 or around that age. But like, how old are like the drivers, and like, do they just, you said you showed up on a Friday night and they just let anybody and everybody just race run amok on these things? So it's just like savage people just running around.
Oh yeah, it's a fucking circus. Oh, but wow. Yeah, when I started, there was no place to practice, so you would just show up the race and race. but they have division, so they have like the juniors, which is like kids from like 9 to like 13, and then they have classes. So they have a third division class, which is the newbie guys that are out there, and those guys they wad themselves up every week. And then you got division two, where it's like the intermediate class, and division one are like the guys that are really good that actually make money at it. Mm-hmm. I got up to, I was almost division one. I quit right before I got into the first division. So I went through all the stages of it, but it was cool because it was a very small community, and I've met so many some of my best friends in the world are people that I met through that sport, and still very close to them to this day. And we all looked out for each other. We all traveled together. It was like kind of being in a band, but in a motorcycle,
right,
you know, racing system. So, it was one of my favorite things I did in my life. And I'm just so glad I did it. Cause I was, for a long time, I was scared to do it. It's gnarly as fuck. And yeah. I was like, you know what? Just do it. If you don't do it, you're going to regret it. And so I ended up doing it, and I had the best time of my life.
So obviously you're like shitting bricks, nervous for your first race. And like, obviously, you know, like you said, you were scared to do it and you eventually bit the bullet. So like, you're running through that first, you're hitting that throttle for the first time in a race. Like, are you shitting yourself? Or are you just like so psyched? Or are you nervous? Or are you scared?
Luckily, what the crazy thing is, like, normally they go by yardages. So the new guys really start on the 0 yard line. And as you get better, you start go further back. So the scary thing is when you're in the front, you have the really good guys behind you, and they pass you or knock you over. That's the scary part. But luckily, my first race, they moved me to the back. So I was in the very back of the whole, the yardage. That was the first year they did it, because they didn't want the newer guys in front. So, and there was so many, I had like 10 guys in my race at that race, maybe more than that. So I was dead last, and I was just putting around. I was just like getting the feel of it, you know, and just like, oh God, I'm actually doing it, you know. And so,
but did they have to wait a little longer to let you just finish? Did they, you know?
Yeah, right.
An extra couple minutes.
Yeah, I wasn't that bad, but I wasn't trying to challenge anybody. But yeah, I made out alive. I'm like, cool. And then after that, you know, you start getting confidence, and you start like learning how to like race. And so by the time, I won quite a few like made events, which was awesome. I worked my way up to it, but
how long does it take to get used to it? I mean, because the curiosity is because you don't have anywhere to practice. You know, there's no track where you can like fucking practice or race other people in this particular weird sport. But like, so how often? I mean, obviously you're there every week, or you're trying to get there every week. But how often or how long until you are like competing to like get mid of the pack, which isn't winning, you know, but you know, you're messing around, you're getting your bearings. How long until you're into it?
I can't remember when I won my, that's a good question. I don't know. I think it took me about a year to finally like get comfortable with it, or at least one season, which is like 14 races, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things like that. I mean, motocross is different because motocross is a bit of a skill. You know, it's more of like you got to navigate jumps and ruts and turns, and speedway is one of those things where it's like you just realize like you just got to fucking man up and just hit the gas, you know, and just go. And you just got to ride the bike as hard as you can, you know. And then once you get that, once you're over that fear of like just letting it go, because those bikes are fast, you know. Yeah. And once you get comfortable with the speed of it and just letting go and just getting aggressive, then things start, you know, coming a little easier for you. It's just getting over that hump of like, oh shit, I don't want to go that fast.
I mean, that's like that's a whole adage for life right there, Jeff. You know what I mean? You let go and things start coming for you. Know what I mean? It gets easier. Things start
it's
coming
like,
to you.
You just got to grab the throttle, man, and go.
Yeah, whiskey throttle the shit out of that thing, man.
Totally, yeah, totally.
So, you know, you move on from that. You tumble. You have a good tumble. Get some road rash, obviously. Not road rash, because you're on dirt, right? You're on dirt on these things.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You get some gravel.
But it feels like road rash,
Some dirt burn or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, totally.
So what takes the place of this wild adrenaline inducing sport? So like, because obviously, you know, you have to have it. You can't, you know, you can't smoke crack for 10 years and then just cut it off. You have to like replace it with coke, you know, like a Coca-Cola or coffee or smoking cigarettes, you know. So what replaced the dopamine that you were getting from all that?
The music, man. Like, okay. Because music, I mean, right when I was racing, that's when kind of Willhaven had kind of done its first little breakup. So I was still playing with some other bands and stuff, but it wasn't Willhaven. So my whole world wasn't music. It was just kind of a side thing. And then when I started racing, that's when Willhaven kind of became more serious. And even though we were kind of in and out, it was more of a constant thing. And so music to me is like just as much of an adrenaline rush as racing dirt bikes, you know, like writing a new song or playing live, like that equals that same adrenaline. I mean, that's probably why I rode dirt bikes, is like I needed that same feeling that I could get with music. So that music just moves me, man. Like it just fires me up, and I love playing, and I love playing live, and I love writing new songs. And so, you know, I've become way more mellow, and I can play a lot of golf now, which is like easy on the bones. But I feel that rage, that fuel that I need to get out, I guess through music. And luckily, Willhaven's like, we're firing all cylinders now, and those guys are just with me, you know, on everything. So it feels good to like be in a band and be able to get that out. And when we were practicing, like, you know, 3 times a week now, and it just feels good, you know. Mm-hmm. And I always thank those guys, like, thank you for like, rocking out, like, you know, thanks for coming to practice, thanks for letting us like get together and create music and just get this out, you know, because I need it, you know.
Yeah, well, anything else on the anything else that they can look forward to? Obviously, you got the Carpe Diem mini tour. You have 7 coming out in July. You've had a couple singles. I think you've had 3 up until today, or around 3 released.
Yeah,
up to today. What else is up in the pipeline in the next couple, you know, weeks, months, years for Willhaven?
You know, it's one of those things where we don't have shit planned. It's like everything just kind of happens. So, you know, like as much as we would love this band to like get bigger or, you know, get a bigger audience, which is like, it's not so much about the money or fame. It's like, I just want our music to get out to people. I want to hear people that hear our music, you know, mm-hmm. And that's what's most important to me. So whatever that is, whatever, maybe something goes viral, I don't know what the fuck happens, but we just kind of take it day by day. And we do, you know, we have a couple of tours coming up, that Carpe Diem thing, Furnace Fest. We are working to try to get over to Europe in October right now. But other than that, we're just kind of just letting things unfold out as it is. You know, it's one of those things, is like, we all know, being in the business for so long, like if something pops off, then things start coming in, you know, like if the record does well and promoters want to book us at their venue or whatever, they'll reach out, or, you know, people do interviews. It just, we just kind of like let it come, you know. We don't try to force anything, because the more you force, like, the more you just get disappointed, you know. So for us, just we just want to have fun and create music and play live shows and hopefully gain some new fans and, you know, keep the band going, you know, because the band's really important to us and we love it and we would love to see it grow and kind of take its own identity. It's like, I'm in Willhaven, but I don't, I consider Willhaven its own thing. You know, it's not, it's a part of me, but it's not mine. You know, it's, Willhaven's its own monster. I just help feed it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, just kind of let, just keep going. And we actually are writing new stuff already. And some of the new stuff is fucking killer. So I'm excited about that. Yeah. So we're just trucking along, man. Like, we've been doing this for fucking 30 years, you know? It's like, we just kind of just keep rowing that boat down the fucking stream and just see what happens, really.
Yeah. I mean, there's, how long do you think you'll end up doing it? Like, do you think of yourself as like a 7-year-old man still doing this?
It's funny, because like, when you're in your 20s, your 30s, you, like, fuck, I'm not going to die. Yeah, I'm going to be out of here by 40, you know, but
it's wild, though. I don't mean to interrupt you, but like, it's wild. Because like, I remember my dad telling me when I was a younger kid, and it just so happens to be the band that he was talking about is Limp Bizkit. But he was like, they're going to be nobody in like 5 years. You know what I mean? And I'm like, okay. And I mean, like, that's what I thought. You know, and you think that because the band is so new at that time. Like, you're only, you know, the bands you were used to hearing on the radio have been around at that particular point for 30 fucking years. So there's already legacy bands that are on the radio. But, you know, it's wild that even bands much, much smaller than Limp Bizkit stayed around for much longer periods of time. And now here we are. Like, that's why I was asking, like, at when you were younger, you didn't think like, oh yeah, I'm still going to be listening to dead, you know, dead guy at 70, but I'm willing to bet nine out of 10 times we let this life play out, you're probably listening to dead guy at 70.
I think, you know, it's funny. I think what it is that, I think people just love like people that play organically or play their instruments. Like, I mean, Limp Bizkit gets a lot of shit, but they write good songs, you know, and they play, when they play live, they don't play to a backing track. They don't play to a click track. They just go out there and rock it, you know, and people like that energy. They like that, like that. There's an energy to it that you can't get with the band that plays to a backing track or, you know, whatever. It's like, or it's a different world, man. Like, I've seen all kinds of bands like being around in the scene, and the bands that always last are the bands that actually play as a band, you know. Like, I mean, it's just nothing better than that, you know. And I just think those bands will be, that bands that play drums, guitar, bass, and sing will always be around, and they can always play, you know. There'll always be a market for them, you know. And if you write a good song, it's gonna last forever, you know. And I don't know, I do think that Williams in a different position, is because like Grady and Mitch and Adrian and Sean, who plays in Willhaven now, like, those are my best friends. Like, those are my guys I hang out with outside of Willhaven. You know, that's my family. You know, if I have anything wrong in my life or something had happens, I call one of those guys. I don't call some other friend. Like, those are the guys that I call for advice, for anything, you know. Those are my boys. So as long as we're still a family, like, and music is our love, and I think we'll do Willhaven until we get totally tired of it, you know, or, you know, something else. But so Willhaven's in a different position because we're not a band made up of people that we met online or through a magazine or whatever. It's different. We're a family. So I can see Willhaven going as long as we'll just play music just for the hell of it. We don't need to play live shows. We'll just go in the practice room and just jam together. Yeah. You know, it's like, that's just how Willhaven is. But, you know, for bands like, I mean, Deftones are in the same boat too, because the core of that band, they've been friends since they were, you know, 14 years old. So it's they're in the same camp as Willhaven, so they can go on forever as well, as long as they keep everything else intact. But yeah, I think there's, I hope to go as long as I can. I was funny because like, there was an interview, me and Grady did an interview last week, and he's always kind of been in and out of the band. Mm-hmm. You know, he quit and he came back, and I always kind of wonder where his head is at. And they asked the same question. They're like, you know, how long do you think Willhaven can be around, or do you guys want to do the record? Grady's all, I think this band can go on forever. And I was like, whoa, okay, that's cool. He's never said that before, you know? So I'm like, oh, okay, that made me feel better. Like, he's into it. And I think It's funny, as you get older, I think Deftones is going through the same thing, is like, especially after COVID, as you get older, you appreciate being in a band and being able to do this and playing music with your friends. Because when you're 20, you don't think about that shit. You know, you're just like, I'm here playing music and but as you get older, you're like, oh shit, like we've done a lot. And this band is like, Wilhaven has taken me around the world, you know, and places I thought I would never, ever go to in my life, you know, and meet people that I never thought I'd meet in my life.
And you can't even play guitar, really. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, jeez. Totally. It's like, I was like, I did the biggest joke in the world is I got to tour the world and I don't even know how to fucking play a good note. You know, it's like, it's always been like my saying, but I think, yeah, it's like, as you get older, you just appreciate it. You know, like even bands like Rolling Stones, like they still go because they just like, damn, we can still play shows. Let's do it.
I mean, you know? You can, like, right?
Yeah, it's like, you can do it. Fuck it. Like,
and they're setting such a high bar for that kind of stuff too, man. They're setting bars that no one's really going to be able to touch. I mean, you can't. I don't even think a band is on trajectory to be able to touch 60 years live. You know, playing 60 years live. That's hard.
I don't know, man. The way people are like keeping in shape and staying healthy.
Yeah, but you have to stay in the same band. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying.
Well,
you
got
to stay in the same band and do the whole thing. It's,
that is a problem.
Like, 6 years at one go is so hard.
Yeah, being a band
with tough too, man.
People is being a band with people is gnarly. You know, luckily, Wilhaven, like I said, we're all family. But man, like there are some personalities that just clash. It just don't work. You know, no matter how hard they try, it just doesn't work. You know.
I feel you.
Like,
we
see Rage Against the Machine, like one of the biggest bands in the world. They just cannot keep it together. I'm like, come on, man.
Oh, yeah. And
just
keep it together, man. The world kind of needs you to keep it together. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It's like, you need to forget you guys. It's about us. Yeah. You know, fuck that.
Last question, then we'll wrap this up, and I'll send you on your way this Monday evening.
Sure.
Wilhaven and Carpe Diem vinyl. Is that on the plans?
That's so funny. I've been getting so many questions about that.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, I've got that about El Diablo, Carpe Diem. I would love to. You know, it's something I just got to talk to Jordan from Revelation about. I don't know where we stand with those guys as far as that, but I would love to. I mean, I think we have the means to do it now with Midas Head, you know. And I mean, I just got to put the wheels in motion. I don't think it'd be an issue. I think it was probably a good idea now if we're doing this anniversary tour to do it for sure.
Right?
But yeah, I'd love to press those old vinyls for sure. Because I think we did a couple like colored vinyls that were just like, I think we only pressed like 200 at the, or 500 maybe it was. So it'd be cool to do something like that, you know, even if it's just like a limited run of stuff, you know, which would be kind of a cool collector's item for somebody. But yeah, I'd love to. I mean, I get asked all the time, so I just get off my ass and just go down the right path to make it happen.
Hey, well, I can't make a California dude do anything, you know, nor can anyone for the most part. Everyone's so laid back over there. We get a little, we're a little laid back over here, but you guys got more weed for a longer period of time. You know, you guys have been smoking weed for longer. Way more laid back. But Jeff, I had a great time chatting with you today. We appreciate it, and you know, best of luck with Seven and everything coming up with Wilhaven, man. And keep in touch. I'll see you. We'll see you at Furnace Fest. We'll be there. So,
Oh, you're coming out? Awesome. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, definitely come hang out. Come hang out for the day. We're not gonna know anybody there, so more friends the better.
Okay. We will definitely see. I'm trying to get William to come with us. William is the person, or he was the man behind the Dead Guy documentary. He's kind of a
awesome.
He works with us a little bit. We're working on a couple different projects right now. He works with Liam. We kind of like partnered with him on some video stuff. So we got go ahead. Yeah, I'll tell him.
Yeah, I was gonna say, tell him. I love that documentary. It's awesome. I mean, Dead Guy's one of my favorite bands, and I actually got to talk to Tim a little bit recently, and I express my love for him and how much that band means to me and how ahead of the time they are. So
yeah, for sure.
That documentary is, I mean, I'm almost done with it. I think I have still a couple minutes left, but I love the way it was done. And you get to see those guys' personalities. And because, I mean, that was one band that didn't get a lot of like press and stuff like that. They were really kind of just like their own thing, you know?
How big they are. Or it's wild how big that sound is and like how big, like, a lot of the early metalcore sound is, and how influential it is.
I mean, like those bands, like them and Bloodlet and like Earth Crisis. Like,
I mean, you guys are in that. That's what I'm saying earlier. Like, you guys are in that ballpark. You know what I mean? Like,
we are. We are. But
like we were kind of like the second generation of that. It was like those bands were there before us, you know. So I have to give.
You guys were early 90s. You guys were what? We're talking like a year or two.
Yeah,
a year or two difference. Looking back, it's not that big of a. You know what I mean? Looking back,
it's not. But I mean, I wouldn't lie. It was those bands inspired the shit out of me. You know, early on.
You're being very humble. Like, you're being very humble.
Yeah. And I, to this day, like I've even talked to Bloodlet guys. I'm like, dude, you guys are a huge influence on me. Like that 90s metalcore stuff, like, is some of the best stuff I to this day. You know, like their riffs, their just everything was just like a huge influence on me. So, but I'm stoked. I'm going back to dig. I was stoked they got a documentary because those guys deserve some attention for sure. Those guys were the pioneers of that sound for sure.
Well, I'll definitely go ahead and relay that to William. But yeah, we got some more stuff coming out. The pair of us, we, like I said, he's kind of like our executive of video around here at Lamb Goat. So we got some more kind of like documentaries and more like, you know, educational styled content pieces coming out that are focused mainly on like, you know, old school informative, like hardcore metalcore lineage.
I love it, man. That stuff needs to be documented because like that was a huge scene, and that definitely shifted.
I think we're coming around on like the secular thing. It's like the cycle. Like now, enough time has passed that we can be like, oh, look at this tour from 20 years ago. Look at the names on this tour, and then now they're like the five biggest bands of all time.
But it's like the new metal thing. I mean, that's definitely made a huge comeback, you know. And there's no reason why that the '90s metal, you know, hardcore scene couldn't wake up to that too. Because I mean, there's some amazing bands that came from that time that people have had no idea they existed. You know, so like if people got to hear Dead Guy, they're like, "Holy shit, this destroys everything out right now!" Like this is crazy. You know, I mean, I see Dead Guy's actually doing a tour in Europe coming up. That Tim had posted. I'm like, that's so fucking rad. They've never been to Europe.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that's so rad. They're finally getting like some recognition and like some flowers that they deserve, you know. And I actually told Tim, I was like, you guys need an opener. But
no thanks.
Like, yeah, right. But I love like that those bands are getting some recognition because like they didn't get it where they deserve it for sure.
Yeah, and we're gonna do everything we can to kind of continue that going forward, whether it's a new band or those old bands, you know, kind of link the two together with the youth and the elders of the scene. So that's what we're
I mean, it's a market for it. I mean, like Gorilla Biscuits is still touring,
of course. A lot of bands are still out there just still turning the wheels, man.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love seeing it, man. And they still got a crowd. And I mean, they got young. Yeah, it's not just a bunch of 50-year-olds. younger kids in there too, which is rad.
Yeah, I mean, I when I see a lot of like, I've seen a lot of bands recently that are, you know, older legacy style bands, whether they're in the hardcore scene, metal scene, or even like the certain new metal bands. And I'm just like floored sometimes. And I'm like, how does this kid know? You know what I mean? How does this kid know about this?
That's word of mouth, man.
I'm always curious.
Yeah. I mean, those documentaries help too. You know, some kid's going to stumble upon the Dead Guy thing and go, oh, this is fucking rad. Like,
yeah, hopefully.
It's funny because I went and saw Deftones when they did that Gajura tour recently. And I remember I was in the crowd and I'm looking around going, holy shit, there are so many young kids here. I was floored. But a lot of goth chicks, like, it looked like 1997 all over again.
Yeah.
I was like, "What the fuck?"
No,
is going
it didn't.
On?
There was there weren't that many girls back then in the scene back then. Jeff. You know that there are way more girls now.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm here for it. I'm just a little jealous that it wasn't like that back in the day.
Yeah. But I was tripping like how many like goth girls there were and like young kids. I'm like, this is crazy. Like this band is like we're 50s and these kids are like. There's tons of kids at the show, and that was really cool to see. I was stoked on that like they're able to like get a new generation of fans. So,
it's wild.
I mean, there's kids out there that love that stuff. They just got to be, you know, just kind of shown. There's so much crap out there now with TikTok and YouTube and all this stuff. The kids got to like sift through. So they just got to be pointing in the right direction. Really,
it's wild because I'll turn 40 this year. So it's really been a mind fuck for me to see all this like. In the last couple of years, has come back around, and then for it to be like I said earlier, like, you know, I kind of when my dad said that, you know, that music won't ever last, I kind of assumed that it wouldn't last, right? Like, it was a fad. And, like, and then nu metal kind of faded away really shortly after that, you know, because it got made fun of and it wasn't as cool because the industry kind of, like, you know, everyone in the industry wanted to get a piece of, like, rap rock, and it got kind of, like, bastardized or whatever, and, you know, for the worst. But it's really weird to be on this back end now at 40, seeing, like, hardcore metal still, you know, still doing its things, it's still churning, but then you have all this nostalgic stuff for the last 20 years coming back, whether that be, like, you know, Wilhaven albums or other bands reuniting, or, you know, nu metal coming back because it's finally cool to like nu metal again. And it's just wild to be on the back end of that as a, you know, as a man instead of a child, you know, just like looking at it going, like, it's crazy that it survived. It survived, right? Like, you know, our little scene survived the infancy of it, you know, in the early 80s, 90s.
Well, the only reason it survives is it's good music. You know, there's, yeah, can't deny it. Like, I mean, those bands put out some fucking, I mean, I still rock those records all the time. Oh, yeah, it's sure still better than half the shit out right now, you know? And it's like, the music just stands the test of time. Like, nobody still sounds like Dead Guy. I mean, Dead Guy's been broken up for how long? And, like, there's not one band that still has the fucking angst and the craziness and the riffs that Dead Guy had. Yeah. You know, there's no band like it. There's still, to this day, no one's copied him. You know, there's no band like Coalesce. There's no band like Converge.
Yeah.
There's no band like Earth Crisis. Even Snapcase is on there. I mean, like, it's just a different time, and it's crazy that you don't think more bands would copy them that no one has. Like, it just, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, it's cool to see. But what's cool is also these bands that are coming back out. I mean, they're putting out good music.
Yeah.
You know, like, so all these bands that we love, they're still putting out good shit. You know, like, Dead Guy wrote another record right now, it'd probably be fucking phenomenal. You know, I've heard Bloodlet, like, working on some stuff, and it was so
Dead Guy's working on, like, some stuff.
Yeah, and I was like, come on, man, like, get this out, you know? I was like, it's so awesome. I want to hear some new music. So I'm with you, though, man. I'm ride or die. Like, much love for that scene and those guys. Like,
yeah,
I'm all for it.
Well, that's cool, man. And again, man, I appreciate your time. So I'll cut you off. We got a little long-winded there. But again, it's what happens when you bring up, you know,
that's all good.
Side tangent things. Yeah, yeah, it's all good content.
Podcast is all conversation,
it's
man.
It's all good.
No, yeah.
Well, again,
all right, brother, I appreciate it, though. I appreciate it a lot.
All the great success. Like I said, we'll see you at Furnace Fest in September. Yes. All the success with Seven on the 7-7 on the 23rd of, or not 23rd, on the 2023, you know, July 7th, oh, yeah, the album will be out. Yeah. So pick it up, stream it, buy some merch, and like I said, we'll see you at Furnace, big dog.
I'll come find you. Thanks, all brother.
Take it easy, Jeff.
All right, take care.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.